21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Look up your chimney, the sky ain't blue, it's kind of yellow, you know it's true.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. This is Dr. Bob Hieronymus, or sometimes I think I am. You know, when you get 2 to 3 hours sleep a night and you got 14 projects on the line all the time, it gets kind of scary. It really does. Our executive producer and research assistant who helps me through some of this is Laura Kortner, and our engineer tonight is Kristen Hager. Our guest is Joe Honig. And he obviously is a mentor of mine. I've learned a great deal from him, especially how to keep my patience when everything else is falling apart. You can read some of his insightful essays on our website at 21stcenturyradio.com, including A Vote is Only the Beginning of Democracy, Dangers of Irrelevance, which we haven't touched on yet. But we have talked a little bit about can America really afford peace, and that's quite questionable. We were talking a little bit about PR, Joe, and one of your columns, I can't even pronounce this fellow's name, Ashrawi's? Is that how you pronounce him?
Well, there's a Mr. Ashrawi and a Miss.
All right, let's say Ashrawi.
Yeah.
Revealing statement on refugees. The point, the reason why I'm interested in this is this what you first said in the line here? You know Israel is doing something right when it manages to put both Palestinian Authority and Hamas on the PR defensive. And it evidently did exactly with that with last week's conference in New York to raise awareness of Jewish refugees from Arab lands. Now, this is something lacking in my education, which could you, as a matter of fact, I bet you it's lacking almost to all of our listeners' education. Could you give us an analysis of this,
please? Well, what a lot of folks, I don't know why they would worry about it, because it's not in the daily realm of Americans to worry about, but 800,000 Jews have been driven out of Arab countries since the rebirth of the State of Israel, and nobody's asked where those people went. A lot of them have had to flee to other, to a variety of countries, but that's 800,000 people. And by the way, this isn't Joe Honig making this up. All this stuff is on the record. And if you went and Googled up where did the 800,000 Jews in Arab countries go, you'll get your answers. I have other data here on the whole thing. And that's a refugee problem. We have refugee problems around the world that are pretty horrendous. But what they had to do was to get these other countries to take a look at this. I'll admit that Mr. Netanyahu is not the best PR guy in the world, but what he does is he stands up for his country that has about 7 million people compared to over 300 million surrounding him that don't like them. And sometimes you get a little aggressive, which he does, and but you've got to make those points public. And regretfully, and it hurts me to say this, because I've always thought of myself as some kind of liberal, moderate, in the middle kind of person, having marched with Martin Luther King. But also, I'm a businessman, and I damn well care about running a profitable business. I find that publications calling themselves liberal, progressive, are virulently anti-Israel, and some of their people, frankly, virtually anti-Semitic. And you will not hear them talk about these refugees or the people driven out of those countries. Mm-hmm. And this is why I don't like these terms, liberal, conservative, and whatever else it is, because it doesn't define all of the people of all the wide variety of political thinking. So the refugee situation is a tough one. And they did get their attention, as they should have. But you'll find that Mr. Ahmadinejad and some of the other folks don't want to talk about this.
Well, what about this, I'm going to say Ashrawi. said that terming Jews from Arab lands refugees is a deception and delusion because they migrated to Israel, which is supposed to be their homeland. And if Israel is their homeland, then they are not refugees. They are immigrants.
Well, that's of course, a very important point, that all Jews were welcome to the state of Israel to resettle the country, and there's history on their side in terms of all those things. And while he says they're not refugees, they were damn well refugees when they were driven out of the country. And if you look at the statistics of how many Jews remain in those countries since 1948, it's negligible. And they became refugees once they were driven out. Maybe by the time they got to Israel or wherever else they went, they were not treated as refugees. But they were sure. You know, there's a song, frankly, that was left out of Fiddler on the Roof, about when Messiah comes and how it, you know, would deal with the Jews, that every place they went, they were driven out. This is not news. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Eshrawi's use of the term that they're not refugees once they got to Israel is a little illusory himself. So it's a deceptive use of the language.
Well, what about this phrase here, to many Palestinians? A Palestinian state really isn't a long for a homeland. It's just a vehicle for destroying Israel.
Well, you know, we can get very technical. There never was a nation called Palestine. There was a territory mostly run by the British and occupied by the British called Palestine. And people who want to have a country are entitled to have a country or a state. I don't know that all Palestinian, or people we call Palestinians, want to destroy the state of Israel, but the Iranian president and his clerical authorities there say you ought to kill all the Jews and destroy the state of Israel. But I don't know that all the people we know as Palestinians have that in mind. Too many political people in the United Nations, which I call the United Nations of Hypocrisy, want to inflict problems between both countries. Israel got established, it's done things, it's managed to do it, but then you have Hamas. Hamas, where the Arabs don't want to brand it as a terrorist group, is a terrorist group. And I say that without any complication. But they should not be seen as representing all Palestinians by a long shot. Mr. Abbas, I think, who represents the Palestinian Authority, I think would rather get things calmed down and work out something with the Israelis. But the problem is there are too many people with questionable motivations who don't want that really to happen, and they do want to get rid of the state of Israel.
I believe you're absolutely correct along those lines. Let's touch on the economy, Joe. What kind of economy did President W. Bush give to Obama when he left office?
It was a mess. Not that Obama's done everything right or wrong or anything else, but it was a terrible mess. Because I wrote an article some years ago that Mr. Bush was an amazing success in one negative fashion. He's the first president in ages to run a war economy with a recession at the same time. And it was right about that time when the bottom fell out of the mortgage market for a variety of debatable reasons. And while we were running up the bill on this Iraqi war, in fact, I just happened to come across while we were talking an article that I wrote all the way back in 2002 called The Cost of War, and then it was only $67 billion. So as the time went on, he left a bit of a mess. Now, whether Mr. Obama's done the right stuff with it, it's hard to comment. One of the biggest subjects that comes up is who provided the greatest number of jobs, as if all jobs are the same transferable term. I mean, some jobs are jobs as technicians, some jobs are sweeping floors. And what the unemployment rate was at a certain time, what it is today, and Mr. Romney accuses Obama of not creating jobs. Well, for all my life, business people have always claimed, and I was one of them, the government does not create jobs, except back in the Great Depression when Roosevelt created CCC camps and WPA, Works Project Administration, to get some people out there working. And more conservative people claim the government, it's not the government's jobs to create jobs. Well, I agree with that. But if that's the case, why are they raising hell with Obama for not creating enough jobs? Because what jobs should he be creating? Now, what I do hear now, that the corporations are saying we can't find enough skilled people to fill the jobs we need, or we have open, like Microsoft and some other corporations have a lot of jobs open. Well, in a case of something like Microsoft, or high technology corporations like that, they have a couple of difficulties. Number one, it can't be just somebody who is a skilled computer person. It has to be somebody who fits in with the really stuff that could be classified that the government doesn't want foreign workers to come in, even on visas, to learn how to do certain things that rise to the area of classification. But there are many other technical skilled areas that my claim, and I wrote about it, some corporations that are raising hell with the administration about jobs are holding off hiring. And frankly, one of them even, they're waiting until after the election, and then I think you'll see hiring. But Mr. Obama didn't have anything to do with Bank of America getting ready to fire 16,000 people, because there was no administrative decision that would have caused that. But they haven't talked about lowering the bonuses the big executives are getting. So if the jobs thing is a major issue, one of the things I believe, since many major industries are making good profits off government contracts, I think they ought to consider that they ought to set up skill training programs for those who might qualify, and in effect having a school for their industry need to help meet their industry needs, because after all, you and I, whether liberal, conservative, or whatever, we're helping to keep those companies going, even though they didn't like it when Obama said you didn't do it by yourself. Mm-hmm. Those corporations, and I can name people like Boeing and Lockheed and some of these other corporations, ought to have skill training programs. It's a novel idea. It's not a socialist idea, not a Marxist idea. It's an industry idea that could help meet needs for the industry and put people at work.
Oh, I sure would like to get back to this jobs propaganda facade that you talked about, but I need to go back to an area in which I find fascinating, because I really enjoyed their paper, Dangers of Irrelevance, America in the World.
Yep.
And obviously lots and lots of other people did too. And one of the person that was commenting on this, this was in 2008, June 27th, was a guy named P.R. Honcho, who said this, de Tocqueville said America is great because she is good. When America ceases to be good, America will cease to be great, because we were good immediately after 9/11. We had almost every nation behind us, ready for America to lead them in a global war to extinguish international terrorism. And then, of course, he notes this goodwill was squandered by an incompetent and arrogant administration, devoid of any vision beyond pursuing its own petty partisan self-interests. And instead of bringing nations together, Bush and Cheney drove them apart in their quest to benefit their corporate friends and wealthy supporters. And instead of unifying the nation, Bush and his minions demonized anyone who disagreed with their leadership, especially. But this comment here, I'm going to ask you how you felt about this. Meantime, Bush threw out the Constitution, opened secret prisons, condoned torture, started a war with no purpose that's destroyed the economy, politicized the Justice Department, wrecked the military, and much, much more. Under Bush, Cheney, America ceased to be good. Do you believe that?
Yes and no. I'm not sure it hasn't continued. Because we haven't closed Guantanamo, and we're still out there fighting.
Mm-hmm.
But what they did create was something that did result in the stream of activities that got people to say, we don't like us. They don't like us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just they don't like us. They were happy to do anything to undermine us even forcefully. So the answer is, yeah. There is a book by, I would think most people would respect the only person in history to win two Congressional Medals of Honor and live, a Marine Corps Major General hero, a guy who's got a training place named after him on Okinawa, who wrote a book called War is a Racket. And while some wars, if you're invaded, have to be fought, you got to wonder why a war based on what were claimed to be WMDs that never got found could not be stopped. And to many people, we began to look like we're pushing ourselves, pushing other people around a bit too much. And like I referred to, of course, those oil fields that went over to that we didn't benefit from, and so what did our boys die for?
Right.
We did lose. I wrote this article, The Dangers of Irrelevance, and I wrote another one called A Death in the National Family, Citizens Respect, I think it was called, because a lot of people in the country say, what are we doing and what are we getting from all this except a lot of hassle from around the world? And so Honcho, whom I remember quite well because he could never see Mr. Obama doing a thing wrong ever, but never questioned there still being in Afghanistan. But he was right that a lot of the things that were set up at that time by Bush Cheney did damage our relevance around the world, didn't see us as protectors. I'll give you an example because it's known in the PR field. We spent, or Bush spent, $2 billion on private PR to market the war in Iraq. I mean, this is not new, and Joe Honig didn't make it up, and it's not an accusation. It's just a fact that's on the record.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to the invasion, there was an even big deal down at the National Press Club I belonged to in Washington. And I didn't know what it was about, but it was promoting how you can take advantage of new opportunities in Iraq. Strangely enough, it was before the invasion. And after all that took place and we didn't find any WMDs, I've often asked people, why didn't we just stop? Well, we then had to fight somebody called Al-Qaeda or some insurgents or whatever it is, but we could never seem to beat them. So, yes, it did damage our relevance in the world. And even when we've been tough to deal with, we have been relevant in the, as world leaders. And we don't have that right now. And that worries me rather substantially. And I spread the responsibility around, but it did start with that business in Iraq. And I'll give you another example that has never ceased to befuddle me. Before the invasion in early 2003, I guess it was, or somewhere in there, and before that time, when we didn't know whether we liked Iraq and Saddam Hussein or we didn't like Saddam Hussein, we had trouble with all that because Ronald Reagan shuffled off billions and billions of dollars to Saddam Hussein when he was fighting with Iran, of intelligence, arms, and everything else, and people went to visit Hussein. And then we heard that he had a nuclear operation. And when Israel, without permission, in quotes that is, went in and destroyed it, they caught hell from Reagan and the UN and everything for having the nerve to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now they're talking about doing it with Iran, and they're going to catch hell from the world, too. We don't understand it. So So when we stand up here, they're not sure which side we're on or how we can be respected. And I happen to like this country, and I want us respected.
Yeah.
But our political leadership over the last 12, 13 years, including today, I'm not sure, has done the necessary job to bolster that respect.
Well, we'll take a final, next to last break here on 21st Century Radio. Is this correct, producer? Yes, she says correct. And once again, we're talking to our favorite political commentator and someone who I have extreme high regard for, Joe Honig. And certainly we'll be talking a little bit more about what have we wrought, as well as starting to act presidential. And here's a surprise to me, a Tea Party Gestapo. Well, I'm a little biased in that particular area. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
I'm Michael A. Cremo. I'm author of the book Forbidden Archaeology, and I'm very happy to be on 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus. It is a fascinating show, intellectually groundbreaking, presenting alternative points of view on all areas of science and popular culture.
Well, thank you for the propaganda there. We don't solicit it from them. They just do it, you know. Hey, by the way, the Orioles are doing extremely well. We're not taking any credit for that. But if you go up to our website and you check out what we have done over the years, especially in 1983, it's been documented. We worked with Eddie Murray, Brooks Robinson, and Al Bunbury, and a few others, and Vince Bagley from, I think it was W, I'm not allowed to say that station's number, and a few others. And we worked real hard, and I can tell you this, that Eddie Murray certainly thought that what we did during that time period with those numbers and his carrying, he actually carried a 12-foot banner that I painted to Chicago for one of the games, and it was at a crucial time, as you guys who were following it know. And, of course, right now we're in a situation, Joe, in which we're in first place with the Yankees, and I hope we can stay there. But this has certainly been an exciting year. Are you an Oriole fan as well?
Well, I don't know if you remember. I came from the lower economic area of Baltimore originally, and, yeah, I was an Orioles fan. I'd like to see him do it, although I did root for the Yankees for a long time.
Well, we'll have to put you under arrest, Joe. Citizen's arrest.
You know, we all have our athletic heroes. I'm a football person. So.
Why New York Yankees? I mean, what was it there? Who, was it Mickey Mantle?
Maybe it's because they had such spectacular success.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you're a kid, you look for people who are spectacularly successful and... I guess that maybe that's why. Of course, all the propaganda was certainly in favor of the Yankees.
Well, certainly was. I remember the time. Well, we actually had where I lived, and I lived in a lower economic situation than you did, Joe.
Right.
Isn't that great? Isn't that great? Got something to brag about. but we lived where 2930 Greenmount Avenue, which meant we overlooked Old Oriole Ballpark, and my... Mm-hmm. My family got to see Babe Ruth play ball from atop our rooftop there. And that's the reason why I wear my New York hat from time to time, because of Babe Ruth. I love that man. I love the way what he accomplished in that
particular part. A democracy. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's a republic.
It's a republic,
still able
yes.
To do it.
Yeah, my wife would definitely say it's a republic. And don't get too...
So we're all Republicans then.
Well, in a certain sense, we are representative. Well, you know. Okay, now, there are other topics here that, as a matter of fact, I don't think we've finished with one. Well, we haven't finished with a lot of things here. But I need to go to what have we wrought. You remember that paper you wrote?
Yeah, it's a while ago.
2009. You already mentioned, one of the things we could have done was create an all volunteered armed forces.
I wasn't in favor of it.
Oh, you weren't on board.
I was not in favor of an all-volunteer armed forces.
But what were you in favor of?
I felt it's very simple. I think that we have taken away a sense of responsibility from our young people. And I believe that every young person, when completing high school or reaching the age of 18, should serve a year, not necessarily in the military, maybe working with the poor, maybe some sense of national service for 1 year. That's all. And the military could be one of those points, that there's a sense of responsibility to the country,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have to favor one political status or another, or one political party or another. Just you do something because you get to live in this country, and because you got a lot of things that are guaranteed for your rights. And I just, I did my own several years, and 14 years. And so as my brothers, nobody in my family was ever drafted. They all enlisted, including my doctor's son and all these people. And my point is, and almost so many countries have required military service, 1 year or 2 years, whatever it is. And what we've wrought is we've deserted a whole generation of young people in America and said, don't worry about anything. Everything will come your way.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have all these rights, and you can demand all these things. My sense is that you should have a responsibility. And what we did with this bloody all-volunteer armed forces, we created more problems. This was Mr. Nixon's signing of the law that was promoted to him by the Cato Institute. And I've got the letter from a Dr. Oy, who was the chief economist, or a chief economist from university and very powerful argument at the time. And what that did was, come time for a war, like in Iraq and Afghanistan, we didn't have all the people we needed. You probably don't know. I'm opposed to people doing illegal things, including illegal entry and lying and everything else. But we actually were happy to take many illegals into the army to fight in Iraq. We took felons, ex-felons, who would not be permitted to carry weapons in America, but they were okay to ship over to Iraq. And anybody wants to debate that issue, I'd be happy to do it. But I don't know that we gave citizenship to the illegals that we permitted to come in and go fight in the military that we had otherwise would not have happened. But what we also found, because we didn't have a draft and we didn't have a larger mass of people to if we agreed that this was a war that had to be fought. So you have turnover. Okay, we kept deploying and redeploying and redeploying people that broke up families. And in 1 year, we had a couple of hundred suicides.
Yes, yes.
In the military. And that's just, I think, in the Army. And we haven't given enough time, budgeting, or anything else to take care of these men and women who came back. And we told them their whole mission over there in Iraq is, knock out those people. Get them, kill them, knock them down, then come home and be a nice boy.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, we had a lot of broken families. And we have not been willing in Congress to budget for that. And just recently, Senator Murray of Washington, proposed a $1 billion employment bill for veterans. And if that was too much money, cut it back, but do something. And Congress refused to do it. So it's what have we wrought? We have now wrought by having an all-volunteer military is we have two separate societies. We don't have a society that says if you live in America, you have a responsibility to the country to do something to help the country. Well, a lot of conservatives say, that's socialistic or that's something else. But gee whiz. We created an agricultural subsidy program in the 30s because farmers were going broke, but we have big corporations now who are getting those subsidies by having corporate farms.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't asked them to be responsible to do some good in other areas where they would claim that's socialistic kind of thinking. So what have we wrought? By having this all-volunteer military, we have just fortified what General President Eisenhower warned of. We've created two separate societies. It's not healthy for either part of that society, and that's what we brought.
Well, indeed that, but I wanted to let you know how I was going to be drafted. They called me in. They asked me what I was going to do for this country. First, they asked me, of course, if I was a pacifist, and I said no. And, of course, everybody in the world said I should have lied at that time because that meant you're automatically draftable, according to them. But the captain that I was talking to, and you got to remember, at that time my hair was down to my waist, my beard was about the same length. And he said, and we were surrounded by, you name it. I mean, there were all kinds of officers everywhere, and everyone was having a good time watching us sitting over there. And he said, well, since you're not a pacifist, when would you go to war? And I said, World War II. I would have gone over there and I would have made my attempt to kill Adolf Hitler because I thought he was just as worse as you could possibly get as a human being. And he said, but what are you doing now? And I told him, I said, I'm writing books on America's flag, Great Seal, Statue of Liberty, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And he said, who's paying you to do that? I said, nobody. Me. It's my idea because I found that most young people don't know anything about America's symbols and have all kinds of biases against the American flag.
You're right.
And he said, well, holy heavens. You know, I said, well, how long are you going to do this, Bob? And I said, the rest of my life. He said, well, if you only did it for 5 years, how about 5 years? I said, I've already done it for 5 years, and I'm going to do it the rest of my life. He said, well, okay, fine. Fine. If that's where you are serving our country. And they allowed, and this is, I'm writing my biography now, that's why this comes to mind. They allowed that the school that we founded called the AUM Esoteric Study Center, that anyone who studied this research material would also become a conscientious objector, which was the greatest shock I've ever had because just about everybody else thought I was going to war no matter what. But serving our country, there are lots of ways of serving.
Absolutely, and this is my point.
And that is what we need to do, I think, in many different capacities. And
but it should be obligatory.
Well,
That's what I believe.
Well, I grew up feeling it was obligatory.
Yeah.
You had to do something. I mean, this is the important nation. The way I felt about it then, still do, this was the most important nation on the planet. Without it, we wouldn't have republics, or you would, if I want to call them democracies, we wouldn't have republics or democracies. And we were the seed of that, and we gave the planet this important thing. Thanks heavens to Thomas Jefferson and our founding fathers. Now, I'm sorry to take so long on that, but I do believe that there are methods by which we can help and serve our nation, even if we totally disagree. You know, this is what one of the problems that I have today with some parties actually saying, being oppositional in just about everything. And a little later, early on, when you mentioned we were talking a little bit about the jobs propaganda facade. Suggesting the very people condemning the president for low job production are helping to keep hiring low until the election. That may be a method by which they can help destroy the president, but I don't think that's ethical.
Oh, well, when you get on to, you can be unethical but legal.
Well,
and that would take us, and as I see, maybe...
Yeah.
Another
7.5 hours,
because the very people who are shouting about the president not creating jobs say the government's not supposed to create jobs. It's supposed to make it possible for people to create jobs. And that becomes a whole other discussion. But for now, the government, for good or ill, has probably created hundreds of thousands of jobs called defense industries. And probably some other social programs as well. So you got to be careful with these shrill political charges of that kind, because a lot of the companies and a lot of the politicians screaming those things are actually benefiting from government spending.
Indeed. Or you have some individuals like Rush Limbaugh, you mentioned a number of, well, you mentioned one thing that I was a bit shocked on. You want to say something about that area?
Well, Limbaugh is kind of funny. There's a guy who wasn't even in the Boy Scouts and has never, to my knowledge and through my research, done a thing to benefit the public except call people names. And he's got a $400 million contract to do what he does, and he called a soldier who came back from Iraq who criticized the war effort. He called him a phony soldier.
Mm-hmm.
But he hasn't done anything. He said he couldn't get into the military because he had a polyneidal cyst and a bad knee. Well, guess who got 14 years of military service with a polyneidal cyst and a bad knee?
Well, you should have been making $400 million then.
I wish I could have. polyneidal cyst gets taken care of in about 45 minutes. But anyhow,
mm-hmm.
The point is, he called this young lady who happened to have been a critic and testified before Congress, called her a slut and a prostitute. Well, what kind of a manly thing is that, and why is it necessary?
Why would it be necessary?
What's going on in this election as well? Pardon me?
Why would it be necessary for him to, after Japan suffered what it did and will continuously suffer because their water supply is going to be in trouble, that the Japanese deserved it because
yeah,
they were environmentalists? Well, what kind of thinking? Or looking down there at Katrina and looking at New Orleans and saying about those folks, they deserved it.
Yeah, the problem is, as I said at the first part in my little commentary, and I have nice people that I talk with all the time, those kinds of commentary play to certain people's biases.
Of course.
Who believe, yeah, right on.
Right.
And I can go back for the last 75 years that I read and, by the way, I collect old news magazines so I can have information before they could lie about history.
That's good. Thank heavens you do.
General MacArthur, who said Japan will never get into the world, will never attack America. That was before they did.
Yeah.
And who was deployed in the field by Herbert Hoover to go after World War I veterans who had camped out to get the money Congress had promised them and didn't give them. And he was willing to fire on him. Mm-hmm. So it's hypocrisy is probably one of the most sabotaging things in society. And so when you have people whose business it is to demean other people, they play to the biases of people who say, yeah, that's right. But that's been in the past and somewhere today racist, it's been anti-Semitic, it's been all kinds of things where they've come down on people the way they look, the way they sound, and it's antisocial, and frankly, in my mind, it's anti-American.
Oh, it is.
Not the America I got a chance to do pretty well in. And so for someone who's never performed an actual public service to the country, to the community, to anybody else but to reinforce other people's biases, I don't have much use for it. But demeaning people is not a manly thing to do.
I agree. And, well, we're going to take our final break of this hour with our guest, Joe Honig. And, again, let's see. If you want to go to his website, you can at joehonig@gmail.com. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Paul Rutan. I work for EQ Triage, and I did the restoration on Yellow Submarine some almost 50 years later. And this is 21st Century Radio, Bob Hieronymus Show.
Thank you, Paul. You know, when I listen to all the stuff that comes out on the radio from time to time, and I hear people calling themselves, I am the great American, I wonder, you know, anyone who's had Psychology 102 especially, could really have a heyday with something like that. And I'm just, it's kind of embarrassing when you have to tell everybody in the world that you are the great American. But that happens. You heard it yourself. That's amazing. All right. Our guest is Joe Honig. And Joe, let's start talking a little bit about something we should have a little earlier. Start acting presidential to Obama and Romney, because I think this is super important.
Yes. I have felt that one of the biggest diminishing factors in this whole so very important election. See, Romney's a nice guy. I mean, he's got a good family and all that kind of business. Unfortunately, he's been captured by an ultra-right part of a party, but he's a decent man. And Obama's got to respond to all the stuff that comes his way. And the country right now doesn't need who's the worst person running, but who are two people from whom we can make legitimate selections? Not because this guy's evil and that guy is angelic, but let's try to approach it in a way, and I know I sound naive perhaps, but I couldn't care less, that the country has to feel that we have competent people running for office in this country, picked by parties to do so. And I find that this presidential campaign has hardly been presidential in the sense of leadership and to establish that world sense of confidence in the country. And the fact that we're in this nonstop war business and all that hasn't helped us a bit. So it's time. In fact, I even wrote, again naively, a commentary. I thought it would be useful for Mr. Obama, President Obama, a little speech he might want to make, saying, we're both in this together. We care about the country. Mr. Romney, unfortunately, has to do what he's done because he's captured by far right, but he's a decent man. And in other words, something that sounds like two civilized people conducting a campaign, but we have different approaches to how things should get done. So far, we haven't heard the approaches to get things done. We've heard one side lobbying some of the worst kinds of vitriol, particularly against Obama, and some of the stuff coming across the Internet or a movie called 2016, but that could be done for either side if somebody really wanted to be creative, because something bad can be done said about anybody. It is not presidential, and it's time for both candidates to bring some civility into the business. There's a National Institute for Civil Discourse that really means it and is trying to influence that concept in American politics, because we're doing a pretty lousy job of it right now.
What do you think of Romney's running mate?
Oh, has he got a running mate?
Yeah, Paul Ryan.
You know, Ryan is another guy. Of course, he looked a little funny this week.
He's been looking funny for
the NRA and
weeks.
Got a shotgun for a gift. And I mean, the appearance of it was not dignified. I mean, we have a Second Amendment. You're entitled to have a weapon if you qualify and have permission and all this kind of business. But here's a gun. Go shoot something. Mm-hmm. He couldn't keep it, of course, because he couldn't accept a gift of that sort as American as a congressman. But the point is, he's not been. He's certainly a higher quality than Sarah Palin, but that didn't take much. Mm-hmm. And he's a nice man who can do a lot of push-ups. He's a health nut, and the problem is, he's selling stuff that he used to. He's selling against things that he used to vote for, and he certainly hasn't had much celebrity in this campaign. I would have hoped that Mr. Romney would have been a more competent challenger. And I would have hoped that Mr. Ryan would have presented. You know, when you have even Bill Kristol, who the editor for the very conservative National Review, which is probably the upper echelon of conservative opinion, at one point even saying, unless he can do better, maybe he ought to think about stepping down and putting Mr. Senator Rubio up there to run. And that's happened within the last month. And then Tim Pawlenty his co-chairman stepping down, there's something that doesn't give the people in the country the confidence they should have. There are people who are, there's the anybody but Obama element because he's had some Islamic background or whatever it is. And then there are people who are upset because Mr. Romney is Mormon. This is not the way to conduct the presidential election. Either the guys give you what you want to hear and see what he's done, or they don't. And the vitriol that's come across my screen on the Internet is frankly sickening. And from both sides, by the way.
Yeah.
But the worst kind has been coming from something I hate to call the right, because conservatives, to be conservative is honorable as well if you don't do those things. If you want to be against certain policies, that's fine. But it's been rather appalling.
What about the Tea Party Gestapo?
Well, I didn't know what to do with the Tea Party at first. They sounded kind of racist. Now, when I used the Gestapo, they used to go in and invade people's privacy and, of course, punish them by calling attention to them in unnice ways. After that, and then they would punish them physically, of course. And I started reading that a couple that makes oil equipment down in Rosenberg, Texas, started this mode to make voting honest. Well, I know there's corruption or fraud in politics, and by golly, it's not only bipartisan, it's tripartisan.
Well, there's
what
no,
they've
there's
done
no corruption.
Is try to get people off the rolls, students, because they're afraid they might vote for Obama, off the rolls because they did not put their accurate dormitory room numbers down on their application.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, well, that's Texas, though. Texas and
no, it's it was in Ohio and Illinois.
I thought it was in Texas.
They came from
Texas,
the people who started this movement. Mm-hmm. And then they put people into threatening circumstances unless they can prove something about their address or this, that, or the other. I know people who would certainly vote for Mr. Romney, and you say, all right, step up here and prove me you're a citizen. Well, what are you talking about? And they say, well, you have to have a driver's license for ID. Well, you know, there are tens of thousands or more people in this country who have little money or maybe recent legitimate immigrants who haven't got cars or driver's licenses. So this whole movement is obvious to influence a particular direction. And I call this unwarranted and, frankly, un-American.
And I agree.
Invading people's lives. And if you've got proof of fraud, let's see them go in both directions.
Good idea. Well, we're out of time, Brother Joe. Joe Honick, go to his email, that is. I'm not too tired, friends. Joe Honick, H-O-N-I-C-K, @gmail.com.
The clock and breaking news now on Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio 1, Bill Vitka. Game